Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about meta-patterns in the periodic table. So we're all used to sort of classes of patterns. There's the accept patterns in the periodic table with these are physical property patterns and blocks and stuff like that. The periodic table itself is a pattern. But we also are aware of cultural patterns. Well, I'm picking up on cultural patterns, which they sort of go in the back and there's sort of like a background to it. So it's sort of interest, but not really. And what I'm sort of looking at is the meta pattern of the periodic table. That is the scientific and cultural patterns put together and how they're interacting. And trying to think through it. So one of the things my experience, I can't believe that I'm doing so many podcasts on the periodic table. And it's something which just keeps on going. There's sort of like 80 naturally occurring elements. You've got up to bismuth is 83, Z83, but there's two of those don't occur naturally because they're unstable, so there's really only 81 naturally occurring elements. So how could such a small number of elements be so confusing? And indeed, they are confusing. I sort of go in, just for an example. You say, oh, well, there's a clear group of little three elements together. That's uranium, neptunium, and plutonium, which are named after the three planets, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. And you say, oh, astronomical ones, and so you read an explanation, but then you say, oh, look, the sun is helium, that's also named after that, or it's not named after, it's the element of the sun, so that's a bit more direct, and you then go in, and you're reading again, and you say, oh, look, there's also tellurium, which is named after the earth, and selenium, which is named after the moon, so we've got actually six elements, which is coming up around 10% of the periodic table. It's named after astronomical bodies. Now, that's a bit odd. Sort of astronomical bodies are a bit science-y. And this is a sort of a cultural statement coming in. That this is a science story. But the thing that worried me is that what is going on? I'm a product of the periodic table story in terms of the teaching methods. And how come the teaching methods have been so fragmented? How come it's been taught so strangely? And so as a scientist, I'm coming up with stories. So this is what I'm talking about, meta patterns. What is the pattern of patterns in the periodic table? What is the patterns of patterns in the periodic table? And what's that telling me? And it's telling me that the patterns are themselves a saleable item. It's got if I draw an element symbol, people recognize it. And if I have a product, I can say, this has got magnesium alloy, or this has got vanadium in it. It's a strong steel. Or you can say, this breakfast cereal's got these elements in it. So they become saleable quantities that people recognize. And so you can sell the product, but you can also sell the product of yourself. If you're a snake oil salesman and you want to actually embellish yourself, you can start to pick up a few stories about the periodic table and set up shop, set up a shingle, as we say, as I know to say. I don't know whether that's actually an Australian saying, to do it. And this is what happens. This is my theory as to why the story of the periodic table is so fragmented, because it's people setting up shop, selling their quick knowledge of the periodic table. They're sort of someone who says, oh, we need some training, and you say, and they walk out the door, knock, knock, who are you? Oh, I'm a trainer, I know how to train. You say, well, do you really understand anything? Don't worry, I've got lots of experience, here's my references. And they're the quick selling people that tend to push it. And there's other cultural things, like I've written, you get these odd responses. So there's this person who has collected all versions of the periodic table. There's thousands of versions on the internet collected, I think. And I said, oh, look, I wrote to him, I said, fantastic work, thank you very much. Here I've got a new version of the periodic table. It's an app. It's a periodic table of jokes. Are you interested in it? No. What? And I didn't realize that. It took a while to think that he's set up shop as, I'm thinking it's a bigger person, he's set up shop with someone who is discovering different versions of the periodic table and putting them out, and that's I shouldn't say snake oil, but his thing that he's selling it. So people have a relationship of the periodic table as an asset they have of relative understanding to other people. And so therefore they're a bit protective of it. The new information comes in, causes a problem. So this is like the history of the periodic table goes from different things. And of course, all this funny human behavior really goes all the way back to magic and alchemy, where magic was the important thing is that the magician is important for the magic. Magic just, well, unfortunately, the periodic table is as a magical document, and it's talking about the magic of elements. But people, the alchemist was an essential part of a chemical reaction. This is one of the things they had to say a chant. They had to, do things naked in the middle of the night, under the full moon, and say various things, get various spirits coming up. So there's this sort of ancient pagan spirituality in science, and the fundamental aspect, fundamental tenet of spirituality is that you are essential for the act. That the priest is essential for the consecration of the host or whatever it is. There are certain social activities which affect the scientific world. That's the sort of fundamental tenet of it, and that's linked up into alchemy, the alchemists with their funny ways. And it's interesting that the periodic table interacted with them because they dealt with chemicals which poisoned them, which affected their mind. It's like this fairly complicated fold through it. So when you're looking at meta patterns, eventually you've hit cognitive pay dirt when the patterns break down. You have to abandon patterns and start to discuss various things. But there is a pattern of the periodic table emerging from magic, alchemy, and the contract of people in the periodic table. This is why people love the stories of people discovering the periodic table. They're the alchemists, the magicians which have come across. And so there's that aspect of the periodic table. So it's allowed me to sort of make a tactical assessment of who I'm dealing with. So all this big body of work with the periodic table, I'm now realizing that the information is not connected, and perhaps there's a reason why it's not connected. So I'd like to make a few connections now. There's sort of a sort of class of object which are concepts. You've got the planets, the six heavenly bodies, the sun, earth, moon, and about three other, Neptune, Uranus, and Pluto, all out there. And fortunately, there's only about 100 maximum. So as you go through, you sweep through, and you realize that you don't know anything. So that's a class of object. There's another class of object which I rather like is the object of hidden. Okay, you can't pick up a hidden. That is, it's hard to find. And there are, in fact, two elements which are named for things which are hidden. Lanthanum means hidden element. It means some sort of Greek to hide. There's no common word, but there's another word for hidden, which means cryptography, and encrypts deep down, hard to find, it means krypton. And so this is discovered by Ramsey in 1908, around that time, through the liquefaction of air. Eventually, krypton Kripken came out, and a short time later, he discovered the same person discovered neon. Now, and then he got a Nobel Prize for it. It's sort of hard to say that I don't know. You sort of think Nobel Prizes. This is again an interesting thing in terms of Nobel Prizes. Are you actually rewarding the brain power of the person, or are you organising the political nous to be a funded scientist in a particular area? I'm not saying that Ramsey wasn't a bright person, but there are certain things where people say, I don't know whether Richard Feynman got a Nobel Prize, but whether these logical, Einstein, these really logical big steps forward, or is it someone who's mechanically, you know, done an applied Nobel Prize, but he discovered krypton, and that's a conceptual, the concept of hidden, you know. So the planets, obviously, the Earth is a real thing, but hidden is a sensation. There's this the smelly elements, which is, I mean, the only smelly element is bromine. That's a sense. There's no, as far as I know, audio one. There's one which I really like in terms of like there's a few I think there's a few elements in there which have got a really sort of funny origin. So this is, if you're looking at patterns of patterns of patterns, and you're looking at the structure of how the pattern's gone through, then you can start to take things apart by saying, oh, well, there's planets, there's the concept of hidden, there's obviously the country ones, which we'll get back to, and place ones. Tin, what a fantastic, how it comes along, this tin and possibly arsenic around the same thing. I'll have to really go back. Is tin is in carbon, arsenic's in the nitrogen. So arsenic, there was a little bit of confusion in arsenic in terms of that it was the Persian for gold colour, and it sounded like the in ancient Greek, that Persian sounded like a Greek word for men, and so it became a masculine one. Just, you know, that's in terms of conceptual, that it's outside concept, it's concept transfer. A concept transfer markup has come through to us. It's really, really great. Another similar one is tin. Cornwall was a great tin mine. It came up there, and there was a Latin word kicking around the place called pond. All right, a stagnant pond. Stagnant means still pond, and so stagnant, S-A-S-T-A-G-N, stag, and some British person misspelt it and wrote S-A-N-N, some dyslexic misspelling, apparently. Look, you can go through, who knows, you can't actually go, where are you going? Oh, I think I'll go 100 miles out this way, or I'll go under the sea. Well, you can't go back in time, and even if you go back in time, your intellect wouldn't transfer. Like, this is these people that say, look, I'm going back in time. The idea is that the human DNA wouldn't go across. In fact, so if you went back in time to, say, the time of Christ, you'd be having diseases in you which has had 2,000 years of development. This is evolution fighting. So it's sort of like, if you go back in time, we've developed thinking, which is different. We've developed disease systems, which are different, and technologies, which are different. So you just can't go back in time. It's a conceptual thing. You have to go back in time. You go back in time and forward in time. It's part of your intellect. But so to give you an idea of what would happen if you went back in time, your diseases have had 2,000 years of getting really intelligent, So it's sort of like your diseases are a bit like World War II, or sort of the modern soldiers now with infrared vision, special rounds, armor proofing, and stuff like that. And those soldiers are, say, the equivalent of bacteria inside you. So they've now become resistant and all this type of stuff. You go back in time, and your diseases would just wipe out all the civilization around you. You'd go, oh, everyone would be dying and things, and you'd just die of diseases which have gone out. It would be an absolute microbial disaster. So we really can't go back in time to try and speak about arsenic and and tin mis dyslexia. It's like a dyslexic element. We also go back in time, go back to these sort of off the cuff, sort of slightly, the marketing people would get in and say, what the heck are you doing? One would be argon, naming an element for laziness. That's that. You're going to tell all the kids about a lazy element. Don't worry, we've got snake oil merchants who will obscure any understanding the meta language. Another one is antinomy, anti-monk. The anti-monk thing. That is the element that's used by monks and kills them dead. So you've got those levels there. This is where I suddenly picked up this line of thought about the pattern of the pattern of the pattern, the sort of third order pattern of the periodic table. So you've got the pattern of the periodic table science, you've got the pattern of the periodic table culturally, like then two pots, and then you can go up a level and see the two patterns together. And then there's a pattern above that about how people use those two, their understanding of those two patterns to market stuff, to market themselves, to make things confusing. And then there's the level above that who can see that and then say, well, therefore I can actually see some of these patterns coming through. And I've only seen this is from the flame color elements. And you pick one up, you find thallium, the thallium one, which is the Greek for yellowy green, and it is indeed yellowy green. And then there's once you got that, and you say, oh, there's another one. Cesium, you've got it. It's not after Caesar. Cesium, it's the color for green. No. You look, that's not green. Oh no, it's bluish green. It's really blue with a slight tinge of green. It's sort of like this slightly aqua color, and that's cesium. And then you realize that the reason that you've read a resource a long time ago that it was green is because the person who did it actually didn't go across and cross. They're not in the process of cross checking because they're not in the process of cross checking because they're in the process of shipping out the information. Just don't process it, ship it out to the kids. And the reason they're doing it, because the kids love you, because you appear smart. Crazy thing, it's like shipping breakfast cereal with a big calcium on it. You've got some calcium, or calcium, well, there you go, calcium. We have a yogurt product here, marketed by the element calcium, and someone sort of will call it, rather than calling it calcium, we'll call it calcium. But the idea is don't stop too much, whether you need more or it's in a process that you can absorb. Just shove it out there, and people will buy it. And it's sort of similar here. You realize that, oh, look, the packaging of this information is cereal, back of cereal packet information. And then you say, oh, well, then your head's going, and then, oh, flame color, the Bunsen burner elements, which there's probably five of them or more. There's the because strontium was observed that way. There's also rubidium, and you go, this morning I went, oh crap, perhaps there's four of these elements. And I went, rubidium is from the Greek big red. ruby colour. So ruby means a red coloured gem, and rubidium means a red coloured, ruby coloured flame. And indium means an indigo coloured flame, and thallium means a grass green flame, because you don't say, oh, you're looking, it's a beautiful thallium coloured dress you've got on, or something like that. It's sort of like a bit of an ick. It's a bit like our national sporting colours. We're probably the good go there. The green and thallium, rather than the green gold, because our colour is a bit icky coming out. So there's five flame colour ones. Then you've got the hidden elements, which is the krypton and lanthanide. Then you've got the sort of groups of elements which start with the same letter, and I won't go in the R ones. So I could go in the R ones, but what's happening is in my head as I'm rehabilitating the complexity of the periodic table. I can remember most of it now, but there's complexity because it's all got these sort of landmines of when you go to recall a piece of information. The problem is that the information is so similar that your brain is going, stop, you don't know whether it's this or that, and so you have to walk around the obstacle and pick it up. So walking around the obstacle of the elements. There's thallium, thorium, and thulmium. And of course, the Swedish people have really got in here. Swedish people, we like you. Not one Swedish person has ever listened to this, so I don't have to really concern myself. But so you've got scandium, which is the Scandinavian one. We're the place where the elements have gone to hide. They've gone to hide in Scandinavia. Scandium, which is at the head of the D block. So you've got the scandium contraction, which only shows up when you get into the P block. So that, that's an interesting aspect of it. Scandium and scandium, which explains why gallium after France. Oh, we won't go into it. So Scandinavia got up there, but we're not content with having one element. Oh well, France has got two elements. It's got francium for francium, or no, we really should call francium, okay, rather than francium. And gallium. We've got a name in the periodic table. I suppose you probably want to get tellurium. We'll stake a claim on that one as well. But so I've got two, and Scandinavia, Americium has got one, but Scandinavia's got two. It's got scandium and thulium. And I have to remember what thulium's used for. Then you've got thorium, which is after a Scandinavian god. Like Scandinavia's just ripped through the periodic table. And then there's thallium, which is for the Greek for green, obviously. Yeah. What does it mean? Oh, well, the origins are either ancient, brought to us by ancient Latin, or they're bought by dyslexic people who gave you tin, SN, or people who are hard of hearing, giving you arsenic. But then there's the sort of Harry Potter end of the periodic table. And you go, Harry Potter, what? Well, there's cobalt, which is krautish, German for, what I love is about when the Germans tell you about their little legends. I remember in, Göttingen? This little picture of a new baby halfway up a building, one of the burger houses, something like that. Was it Göttingen? Oh, I can't remember. He was doing the golden poo, and he had a little poo at the back, which is gold, the baby, which, these fantastic legends. And so, Cobalt, it is the Cobalt, K-O-B-O-L-T, the Cobalt, he's scared of the Cobalt. And so Cobalt was really much like the Harry Potter house elf, like Dobby. So, that's about Dobby in there. And the interesting thing about this is that people who are mining something, they didn't know they were mining cobalt, they were also mining arsenic, and so they were killing themselves off the arsenic poisoning. Oh, look at the period. The table's got this fantastic legend which you'll just not believe. And so what would happen is these miners would be going, and then all of a sudden these miners would be dead, a bit like Midsummer's Murders, but these people would be going, dying off to the side. Or for the American version of Midsummer Murders, it would be Murder, She Wrote, us with Angela Lansbury. Amazing. Amazing cultural things that have come out of both countries, Midsummer Murders and Murder, She Wrote. But the Germans actually were having their own Midsummer Murders, and all these people were dying, and as the detectives, you can imagine the old town, the old villages with the miners and the beer steins and stuff like that. It'd be the Polizei coming out there with the sort of leather hat and the looking like that, and they'd eventually be speaking all in German, but sometimes subtitles underneath, which you couldn't quite capture. And they'd go the suspect list would actually vanish to nothing. It can't be anyone. And then they look at each other, these Germans, German police people say, Da Cobalten. Da Cobalten? I can't even say any German myself, sorry, guys. And it would be, Da Cobalten. Ah, and they'd go up and interview this old wizen woman, the town witch. The Cobalten. And so they discovered cobalt is a mining sprite, which is sort of a sprite or brownie or elf. Like Glenbrook is the home of the gnome. Yeah, Glenbrook. We have a huge gnome festival. There's a gnome. Cobalt is equivalent to a gnome. So there is actually a gnome sitting there. So you've got iron, cobalt, nickel. Nickel, similarly in Germany. Ah, I've found this fantastic copper deposit, but I can't purify it. Said again in all perfect German, you know, blah, blah, blah. I can't pronounce it. Hagen, whatever the Germans speak. And the person slowly drinking their beer hall, the Lorenbrau, would say, I know what the problem is. You've got a mountain sprite, old Nick. Oh, no, I haven't got Nickel, the mountain sprite in my... Oh, have I? So you've got all this sort of almost comic, DC comic type of story going across. And then, of course, you think, oh, well, thank goodness that's... Oh, no, there's another thing, and which is a strontium. So you've got Davy, who's Mr. the David Attenborough of elements of the 18th century, and he's there, and I'm going to name, I suppose it would be a Scottish person. I can't do a Scottish accent. I can't. My sons can do fantastic French and Scottish accents. I should actually say my daughters were in Canberra, and they were just mucking around doing fake Scottish accents, and what happened is, you know, the Mrs. Doubtfire effect. Well, all these people came up with the business cards and saying, we'd love you to look after our children. And they were just doing these fake Scottish accents because of the idea that Scottish women are great child minders. So that's how that happened. But we're going to this Scottish person say, I've been up at Loch Strontium, I suppose. Well, Strontia. So it's Strontia. A-A-N, Strontian, and it's, I've looked at it on Google Earth, it's a real happening place, it's a bit yeah, if I had to pick between the places, between Ytterby and Strontia, if you're going for your periodic holiday around Earth, you wind up in some pretty weird places, but you'd wind up in Los Alamos, Albuquerque. There's a little pile of plutonium, the American supply of plutonium, and there's this sort of town square with barbed wire in the centre of it and these US soldiers. It's sort of like it was this really weird thing. I remember visiting people. So that's when I visited plutonium. So you always think, oh, look, one of these days, where are the last places you'd like to go? I'd like to go to Ytterby, and I'd like to go to Strontium, and then go, what's there? Or Strontium's probably got a little bit of a better hotel happening, a bit more there. They've got a reasonable playground. You go around Google Earth. Not much. It's got a post box and a launch ramp into the lock. And also a little stream, which eventually goes, a Totty Wee Burn, I think it's called. It's not actually a Totty Wee Burn. It's actually quite a reasonable creek going Strontium. So this person said, oh, I got these rocks from Strontium, and I want to name it Strontium after my lovely Scottish village of Strontium. And so there you go. So, oh, that's great. We've got Ytterby, which means shopping village, or, you know, outer village. So this is insane. And then it's named actually twice. I did actually make a mistake. The Yag is not Ytterbium, it's Yttrium. You've got Ytterbium, Y-T-T Erbium, and Y-T-T Rium. It's sort of like not enough vowels in there for anything decent to be English. So I made a mistake earlier on about it. This is only because I'm learning a bit more about these Yag lasers. I sort of had a really poor understanding about it. So we're going up to Strontium, and so you go, oh, right, and then Davey, who else would go in but Mr. Look, he's really, for me, a really confusing person. He's a bit like Joseph Banks. He's one of these larger-than-life landed English. It's almost impossible to get your mind around. This is Humphrey Davy. But he said, oh, no, you can't call it Strontia because you've got lithium, which is like, oh, I'll go through the dumb names of periodic tables. You've got to call it Strontium. Okay, so, all right. So Strontium is named after a village in Scotland. And so what does Strontian mean? It means fairies knows what? The nose of... Aren't fairies incredibly small? Aren't their noses incredibly small? So it must be a bad translation. So the Scottish people, when they were actually being smashed by various other people, used to apparently live underground. I find this hard to understand. And the idea that fairies lived in mine, in underground, and you could actually... like this real pagan stuff. And so, like the German Kobolden, their Koboldens are like little Dobbies, or these evil little, like in Ghostbusters and that type of stuff. There you go. I'll have to go back to spectroscopy, which goes into the romance of it. But fairies know, so you go, oh, yep. Of course, you know that. You're never going to be able to teach any of this because you'll be teaching around, and then as you're teaching, a call will go from the mobile phone of the kid to the parent, from the parent to the principal. The parents will come in and say, what are you teaching this? I'm teaching non-standard. No, you've got to teach the standard syllabus, or the stop sign. And then you sort of, and you mean the fairies? No, everyone knows that fairies don't have big noses. So how could? So you've got fairies' nose. Now we should actually go back. Or there's two other. There's another area of the periodic table in terms of totally uninspiring names for it. But those four coloured elements, the spectral elements, is rubidium, cesium, indium. And thallium, they're the ones. Spectra means ghost. Spectroscopy means the art of looking for spectre, which means looking for ghosts. So it's really all happening. I think you can actually, if you really wanted to whip up, you could say there's seven elements in the periodic table, which eclipses number of planet elements. There's six planet elements, which are ghosts associated with the afterlife or stuff like that. And so that's I'm sure there's other elements in there as you look into it. You've got the conceptual elements, and then you've got the actually really, which hidden's a great, a great conceptual. It's a psychological feeling, or something can be hidden, but it's actually involves your consciousness. It means it's there. I know it's there, but it's not. So something to be hidden is that you have knowledge, but inadequate knowledge. So that's really, really a beautiful, beautiful concept. But then you've got the really the elements which are sort of like, they're a much lower level. There's lithium, which means rock. That element is the most uninspired name for an element ever is lithium. You know, the element found in a rock. Well, sort of, if you were doing element auditions, you'd say, oh, come back when you've got an act. Okay, like element rock, come back. Then you've got the elements which really, bromine, I like it's got a bit of class, it's the element of stinks. Barium refers to the element that is heavy. Sort of like, go inspire me. And then fluorine comes from the element that you put into stuff to make it flow, because what happens is that you're supposed to be melting metals, high temperature alloys, and you want to make a flux in it. The word flux means a flowing agent. So fluorine became as the a flowing agent. Fluorine's just got such a ripper story, but so fluorine means flowing agent, flowy, the flowing element. And it's the element that you pick up a rock of fluoride and just chuck it in your cauldron, and your heavy other rocks would suddenly start to melt. It was the rock that you'd pick to add into all the other rocks, and then all your other rocks would melt because fluorine was a good flowing agent. And I think this would be a worthwhile way. Look, this has gone for 37 minutes. And thank goodness, because I'll be doing half a dozen of these complex things. What's it? Flowing element. I've just sort of lost my plot there. Oh yeah, fluorine. Fluorine is the most gruesome element. So everyone else has been. I worked for 30 years. I think there was one person. Oh, yeah, it's the rubidium experiment, where the person had to do not just one purification process, not two, not 50, not 500, not 1,000, but 15,000 purification steps to get his little nugget of rubidium. And I think no one really cares, but it's great. But that's great, and that's your general idea that every element's some sort of mountain, and you've got to be mountaineering to get up the top. But the actual element which takes the cake for being the most lethal element is fluorine. And fluorine, every time someone purified it, it was so toxic it killed them. And I would expect, I sort of stopped reading when we had knocked out 10 scientists. They got it, and then they'd be sick. Some people would this element killed one person, and the other partner, who was sick for 3 months, said, guess what, I don't care, I'm going back to my periodic table. I have discovered the most lethal element. And of course fluorine is, so fluorine gas is apparently pretty toxic, especially, like you get a fluoride mix, fluoride rock, and a bit of heat and a bit of electricity going through it, and guess what? You've killed everybody around, including itself. You have an out-of-body experience, sort of floating away from the lab. Of course, fluorine is the story. Hydrofluoric acid is the story of urban myth of people dropping a small amount of hydrofluoric acid. The fluorine being such a small nucleus can actually, F minus, can actually go through the skin incredibly quickly. And it's also anesthetic, so you drop it on itself, feel nothing, until your bone's actually free of it. And there's these stories of it getting through a small crack in people's clothing and actually killing people. You know, people come into a lab and there's a dead scientist there who's wreathed in pain or floating in a swimming pool trying to whatever it is, you know, trying to wash it off. So there's all these stories. And of course, you tend to believe these stories. Like there's dichromic acid is something which, yeah, or toluene. There's chemicals which I am absolutely blitheringly ignorant of and scared of. Like I admit my ignorance of it. So fluorine, the story of fluorine is perhaps the most gruesome, deadly story that you come at him. So we're going to finish this off, is that I'm operating on a level of trying to learn these little things and facing the actual learning of it. I have to face, to understand where the element is structurally, the electronic configuration, where it is in the periodic table to help me remember where it is. Also remember let's say you've got three elements, easily 6R elements, more than 6R elements, starting with R. And the problem here is that they are trivially sound the same, and to trivially decombobulate them so you don't suffer an attack of dyslexia, you need to know the trivia. You may as well let the trivia go in. And then information that, say, the person might in the class might Google and they'd say, oh, that's not right. You have to actually have a grade of information higher, and then you need a framework to have that grade of information higher. And this is where sort of the two parallel things, so you realise how you're learning it is coming across, but also how people will perceive it. It's this understanding of the periodic table being a living historical document where culture meets science, meets people who love exploiting culture and science together, meets people who can actually look in at the people who love exploiting it, culture and science, to actually decode the mountain of information coming out and actually put some sense into it. So hopefully this will be a good podcast, and I'll put it up there. And it's not quite a struggle. I'm slowly putting up the assets, the quiz, the word jumble. I'm trying to put it across. Last night I was looking at Google Earth, how you can record Google Earth, and whether people would do that. Just going through and the telephone apps, seeing how that would go. And you put in your mind, this will take 3 weeks and months, and you know, then you just sit down and you, without really thinking, you do one bit of programming which sort of takes you into the mist of uncertainty, and then you see your way around it. So hopefully the app coming soon. So I hope this is a worthwhile discussion, and it's all over the place because, look, the periodic table is all over the place because you've got a whole, it's not one single author, it is a cultural document there's no church of the periodic table, there's no church burning heretics and stuff like that. I should also mention that I've written a few children's books, and I've seen a few mistakes in books about the periodic table, but even our esteemed nuclear reactor, the one nuclear reactor in Australia, which is sort of like a kiddie's hobby nuclear reactor. No, it's quite a good one. There's a mistake in that. And you just shake your head. It's sort of this area of extreme culture. It is a cultural asset, and it is guarded, but it's sort of like Game of Thrones. People, it's like crown, various kings in Game of Thrones of different kingdoms going across it. Each tribe has a king with a crown, and they're unique. However, the idea of the crown and the king is not unique. It's a uniting concept. So the periodic table is a uniting concept amongst all these dysfunctional groups. So therefore, it's got this academic truism, which actually is parallel to the periodic table, but you can actually see how these different groups interact by how they interact with the periodic table. Thanks for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.